Hello once again, everybody. Thank you for joining me here on this special edition of Bang the Book Radio for Friday, August 2nd. Joined by Christian Pina of the Sports Gambling Podcast. We're going to chat here about UFC on ESPN 5 for the main event of Colby Covington and Robbie Lawler. Got plenty of good thoughts coming for you here on this podcast. Lots of good thoughts over at bangthebook.com as well. All of our division and conference season win totals up for college football. We've got daily MLB stuff, daily WNBA, weekly soccer, golf, tennis, NASCAR, UFC, obviously, from Christian. You name it, we've got it over at bangthebook.com. Hopefully you enjoyed that preseason game last night. We'll have some more preseason NFL content coming up for you next week over at the website, since I know a lot of people like to try and hop on some of the value and some of the opportunity presented there. If you missed any editions of Bang the Book Radio here this week, Monday and Thursday, the Bettors Box. Tuesday, we talked with Brian Leonard. Wednesday, we talked with Ross Tucker. Still some good information on those. So if you missed them, go ahead, circle back, check those out. You'll definitely have some stuff to apply to your future handicapping. With that, we'll go ahead and bring on Christian Pina of the Sports Gambling Podcast. Chat a little UFC here. Christian, how's it going today, man?
I'm good, man. We have, God, football is back. We have Hall of Fame game. We have preseason. College camps are in effect. We have baseball daily and every single week UFC, man. So it is a great time to be a sports fan in general, especially, you know, from a betting perspective in Vegas. And, you know, when we look up and down this card for UFC, it's not the strongest, that's for sure. That's kind of where I've been able to find edges in the past. But as you look through this and go down through the line, this one's not really the most exciting from a casual fan perspective. That is for sure. A lot of guys kind of both coming off losses, looking to get back on the right track. So this card kind of sets up in that way of, you know, possibly losers, you know, having a lot more at stake, and winners getting back on track for future, you know, aspirations.
Before we get into this card, I got to ask you, I asked the Las Vegas local Brian Leonard earlier in the week, and I got to ask you about this. And I guess I'll kind of frame it in the context of UFC. In terms of the fight against the Grasshoppers, how's that been going for you?
Man, so look, people, you know, it's kind of a weird thing. If something doesn't come to my front door and it doesn't genuinely affect me or my life with the workload and kind of what the grind of sports betting is, I tend to, you know, not turn a blind eye, but if it doesn't affect me, I kind of don't see it, don't hear about it, and kind of hear no evil, speak no evil type of thing. I opened my back door to let my two dogs out the other night. Four grasshoppers flew in, tried to attack my two dogs, and flew into the house. And, you know, it was one of those things where you can see videos of this, you know, all over Vegas, you know, from your phone in the comfort of your own home. Until it happens to you, it's kind of a really unique situation of being presented with it. It's a thing, man, and it is everywhere. And most times when you see something like this, like, you know, it's in one part or whatever, but this is really all over, you know, the Clark County, you know, Valley, Las Vegas area, no matter what part of town you go to, especially at night, if you're pulling into gas stations, I mean, there's, you know, can't get out of your car type of situations that I've never really quite seen anything like it.
Well, and I got to ask, I mean, you're one of the Las Vegas locals here that I have on the show that actually goes down to the strip. I mean, were you down there at all? Was it as insane as it looked on the video clips?
It's funny. So one of the first viral videos that was posted out there was basically across from the Mirage. And I was at the Mirage for a show on Saturday night, kind of eyes peeled. And granted, obviously, I'm not, you know, out there looking for them or going hunting for them, but I didn't see one. So I guess it's just kind of a hit or miss where they're swarming for that night. I didn't see any down there when I was there. Like I said, last time was Saturday, but they are definitely where I live, which is about 10 minutes southwest of the strip. So it's kind of hit or miss, but the videos are absolutely crazy at specific points of the strip.
All right, well, hopefully nothing else attacks your dogs here anytime soon. And we'll move on to this fight card. And you know, as you mentioned, it's not a real great card. I mean, there's a good amount of name recognition here on this thing, but in terms of fight quality, just doesn't really seem to be a whole lot. Now, here's something I'm wondering about. With this main event here, Colby Covington, more than a $2 favorite against Robbie Lawler. Robbie Lawler, I feel like we just talked about him, and we kind of did, as he just fought back on March 2nd. That was after about an 18-month layoff. This is a much quicker turnaround for him here. It's not that fast by UFC standards, but still, do you worry about him here going with that long layoff and then now coming back about 6 months later or about 5 months later?
I mean, yeah, you look at Lawler at 37 years of age and, you know, I go back into every situation is unique and every situation is different. Now, when you look at that fight of Lawler versus Askren, I mean, the truth is Lawler largely dominated that fight up until the controversial finish. So it's not as if he took a lot of punishment, which I think is the key here in this situation on why he was able to come back like that. It's not as if he was in this war, you know, this back and forth striking war, or, you know, had medical suspensions, all that type of stuff. He largely, you know, dominated that fight. It was what it is. So in this, you know, this type of situation, I don't put a ton of stock into that. I mean, it's Lawler, and it's you kind of know what you're going to get from him. He doesn't have the best wrestling, but he is obviously as devastating a knockout artist as they come in the sport. So in this one, I don't put that much stock into the specific layoff.
All right. Well, as we talk about wrestling, Colby Covington, Division I college wrestler. So does that give him the advantage here in this fight?
This is what it's kind of weird about this fight. I feel like we just saw it. As you just said, we just talked about Lawler. We literally broke down this matchup, you know, when Askren fought Lawler. Covington is just a little bit of a worse, or I don't say worse, just a different style of wrestler than Ben Askren. I'm not really sure why the UFC is matching Lawler up with all of these kind of, you know, these great wrestlers. It's not a great style matchup for him. Look, this fight is largely, in my estimation, going to play out, or at least to have the same things to look out for than the Askren one does. And it really, you know, gets to be that simple. If it stays on the feet and Lawler is able to keep it there, he has a shot to put away Covington early. Covington is going to look to get this fight to the ground, use his cardio, and, you know, kind of drain him out for the duration and win a decision. You know, I know Askren got the stoppage there, but that was, you know, one controversial, but that was just a little bit of a unique situation for sure. We broke this fight down already, man, and it's, we look at Covington, you know, finally taking a fight that is not a title fight after, you know, he's one of the most polarizing guys in the sport, much like a Ben Askren, where, you know, he's in there, you know, trying to taunt Dana White at the Palms playing blackjack and all this type of stuff. You know, this one, it's pretty cut and dry here when we break it down. Striker versus grappler. In my estimation, Covington is just going to be too good. And the takedown defense of Lawler is not going to be able to hold up over, you know, three rounds. And eventually Covington will grind himself out a decision and probably go on a rant at the end of that. That'll be, if nothing else on this card, can't miss TV for what Covington will say if he's able to pull this win out.
Well, and as we look at Covington here, did have that title win over Rafael Dos Anjos, then stripped of the title, wasn't able to defend it, so they took it away from him. What about that? You mentioned how, you know, after a guy gets his title shot or a girl gets her title shot and loses, kind of looking to fade them maybe in that next fight. It's obviously a polar opposite situation here when it comes to Covington. Does it feel like maybe that angle's factored into the price a little bit to make this a little juicier?
I mean, when you look at this from a narrative perspective, I mean, look, when you, in theory, if you beat a guy like Rafael Dos Anjos, claim an interim welterweight strap, it usually means that you're, you know, going to get a title shot. Well, Covington, when you go after a guy like Dana White, that is not the case here. And I think from a narrative perspective, the UFC specifically in Dana White would love to see, you know, Lawler knock him down a peg. Is this in the, I mean, this line is, you know, when we look at this, these are lined where they are for a reason. This is why I said when we were talking about Askren versus Lawler the last time around, you know, I do think that Askren certainly will win that fight, but the price is just absurd for a guy that is at a, you know, significant disadvantage every time that the fight starts, every round starts, and every time it's on the feet. This one's kind of lined a little bit similar. Covington at minus almost $2.50 favorite is something of the same thing here. I think if you want to take a shot on Lawler from a price perspective, you do it via knockout. Don't see him winning a decision against Covington, that's for sure. And you do Covington by decision is a way to kind of knock that juice down. It's really kind of that cut of dry when it comes to path to victories or how this one is priced. But I mean, minus 245 on our striker versus grappler is usually about what you'll see. And you just saw this pretty similar line when Askren came to town.
Jim Miller, a minus 155 favorite as we move on. Another fight here with a couple of guys on the wrong side of 35. Do you feel like there's a good angle in play here with this one?
Look, Clay Guida, God bless him, was a guy I went to, you know, tried to go against for a very long time. I mean, he is making his, 28th appearance. Jim Miller, 33rd. I mean, this is absolutely absurd. I don't say absurd, but I don't know that there's been more of a, you know, kind of combined age, you know, an over on that one, that's for sure. Look, they're at this stage in their career, they're both grapplers. It'll be kind of interesting to see how those, you know, wrestling exchanges, scrambles tend to go. This one, to me, I think that when round props are released, you definitely want to look at the over 2.5. I don't see at this, you know, stage of either one of their lives being able to you know, put each other away here in this situation. But neither one of them have many aspirations of a title fight left. You know, call it what you want, staying active, money grab. It kind of is what it is. This one should be one of the less exciting fights on there. So definitely use that to your advantage, and I would take the over 2.5 there.
Now, last week with UFC 240, we spent a ton of time on the main card, and for this week's fight card, you've got more thoughts on the prelim card. So I'll just sort of ask a blanket question here about the remainder of the main card, all of this on ESPN, by the way. What do you think about the main card? Is there anything bettable for you, really, on this set of fights?
No, and again, we're doing this a little bit early where round props aren't necessarily released. So it's, look, the Trevin Giles and Gerald Marshall fight is one that we can at least talk about a little bit, just because I think it's two names that people will know. And they're both, you know, coming off losses, looking, trying to get back in the right direction. This is another type of fight where somebody, you know, the loser has so much to lose as you start talking about losing streaks and all of that type of situation. You know, these are, you know, really kind of two well-rounded guys that just can't seem to take the next level in their development. Again, another type of this card, as we always talk about, has a lot of themes to it. And this one, to me, this is maybe something you explore around Robin, if anyone is familiar with those, when we talk about these overs, because there's not a lot of finishing power on this fight. And there's certain cards you can look at and you can just see, you know, the narrative being you look up and down on whatever, you know, app you're tracking stuff on, and you just see, you know, eight decisions out there, and people talk about how it was the worst card in the world. And to me, you really want to use those type of things to your advantage. And I certainly think that Giles and Marischal certainly falls into that category with a bunch of fights on the prelim cards as well.
So here's a question for you. I mean, as I was kind of handicapping this week's golf tournament and looking for my daily fantasy article for the picks over at bangthebook.com, this is the last one before the FedEx Cup playoffs, and you have to be in the top 125 to get in. So as I was looking at some of the daily fantasy options, I was looking at guys that were right around the cut line, you know, guys 115 through 135, looking to see if there was anybody in good form kind of worth playing. You mentioned that on some of these fight cards here, you have guys that kind of may be on the chopping block a little bit. How do you recognize those guys? I mean, is there something out there, some sort of resource that says, you know, hey, if this guy loses this fight, he's probably going to be, you know, removed from the UFC. Is there anything like that out there?
It's a little bit unique, man. It really is. I mean, you look at a guy that we talked about all the time on the show, and Elias Theodoro, cut from the UFC for basically winning fights and not being exciting, and because he didn't have the marketability or wasn't able to take the next step in that, you know, and get title fights and that type of stuff. You know, he had the same game plan as a guy like Sergio Pettis, as a Tyron Woodley, as a Wonderboy Thompson, but you have to be successful, and there's no room for error in the UFC when you're going to put on these exciting type of fights. When we look at this, I mean, look, Marischal, I think, to me, I really apply that. Look, you got to see, you know, what type of fight contracts guys are on, you know, if they'll be renewed, if they won't, and girls. But to me, I look for style matchups and what, you know, coming off losses, coming off two losses, what that means for their game, because, you know, inherently they're going to look to change it up and play it a little bit safe. And that is really what I look for here. I mean, Marischal should try to keep the fight onto the floor. Giles is a good grappler himself. But, you know, if guys are leaving themselves open for the knockouts coming off, you know, two straight knockouts, they're going to look to not take those chances, play it safe, and try to change up, you know, what is not working for them. So it's, for me, when guys are, you know, two fight with lost streaks, three fight losing streaks, you know, and on down through the line, on the tail end of those, I mean, it all depends on the current form of guys, and in every situation, you know, is unique. You have BJ Penn still fighting out there. You have Arlovsky still fighting off the, you know, despite coming off a win. So every situation is unique. I just look for how it can change a guy's style and how they'll look to play it a little bit safer.
All right. So as we move to the prelim card here, where again, you've got some stronger opinions here for this UFC on ESPN 5 card. We start with this welterweight fight with Mickey Gall. And this is an interesting one, one that we talked about a lot before we started recording here, because there are some very important betting elements to this fight in terms of deciding when you want to enter the market.
Yeah, look, and I went against Gall in the article, and, you know, Mickey Gall is a guy that I, you know, first and foremost, look to, you know, I look for reasons to not bet against him or, you know, first. I don't normally find them, and he's usually somebody I enter the marketplace on betting against just about every single time. You know what? And I know he fought Sage Northcutt, so it's a little bit of a weird comparison here, but he's a guy that was kind of given too much too soon because of what the UFC thought of him, marketability. And again, Gall winning against Northcutt really led to Northcutt's release and all of that. So Mickey Gall, you know, after beating WWE star CM Punk in one of the most, you know, polarizing, talked about fights in the last, you know, couple of years, of what it really meant of, you know, could a non-WWE Brock Lesnar guy make it in the sport? And, you know, Gall did what he was supposed to do there. When we talk about guys on the chopping block, that being said, if Mickey Gall does not want to go the way of Sage Northcutt, the way of CM Punk, this is his make or break fight. And that is something that is, when your back is against the wall, there's money on the line. There is a lot to be said for what that can do for a fighter's, you know, mindset and what they need to get done. Gall needs to prove that, you know, he has, he's not a one trick pony. And the only way he can win fights is a rear naked choke. Although he does do that one very, very well. And there's certain guys out there, you know, Manny Bermudez, Bermudez Triangle, that have, you know, basically employed a WWE finishing move in every single fight that you look at, they're finishing it the exact same way. Look, when we look at this fight and we break it down, you know, Salim in this spot, people always want to bet against Mickey Gall. And so the public is going to come in against him, I think, not even handicap the fight, not even look at it, and just see an auto fade. And so when we talk about market entry, you know, is there a big price difference at minus 105 to a plus 105 or, you know, a couple cents here or there? No, but to me, there's something that's called a buy point. And it's something, you know, I feel that at a certain point, I have to put my, you know, bias aside, my fandom aside, whatever it is on certain guys. And this is a winnable matchup for Mickey Gall. And, you know, from a pure handicapping, you know, numbers perspective, I make Mickey Gall a little bit of, you know, a more, a longer favorite. I really do. That's the truth. And so if you're going to, you're telling me there's a situation presenting itself where the public is going to come in heavy against him. And, you know, if I can get maybe over a plus 120, I think that that's a situation where I'm going to take the quote unquote value. And again, you have to do that every single time to actually get what value means out of guys. It's a situation that's going to get me on board despite myself with a small Mickey Gall ticket, I think.
There are three women's flyweight fights here on this card. And, you know, as you mentioned, a lot of round props not out there at some of the shops yet. Recording this here on Thursday afternoon. And who knows, maybe Mickey Gall's in that plus 120 range by late Friday morning when I get this posted. But as far as the women's fights go here, is this more of the same from Christian Pino, where you're looking to play, you know, a lot of those over 2.5 props?
Yeah. And again, when they all stack up like this, I think it makes for a great opportunity to get your money in and you know, start in some round robin type of situations, which I think is where the majority of my bets are going to be coming from for this event, just because there's not a lot out there. Besides that, it's something I've done in the past. I've been, you know, quite successful at it, truthfully. I think that, you know, much like football, how many times have we talked about how there's an awful Thursday night game? It's, you know, it's the Browns and the Jets of old, at least of their teams, and it's the worst thing ever, and the game ends 3-0. Well, you know, go next level, and how can you use it to your advantage? Well, you know, you look at a over 9.5 punts prop, and you sit there and you love how bad the game is turning out. That's a situation that's presenting itself on this UFC event where you can really, you know, make a round robin, put, you know, a bunch of these fights in there. When it comes to that, the Shevchenko one, Pudilova, the two that we talked about on the main card, this is really more of the same for me when it comes to these female MMA fights and looking to go over. Goldie and Granger is another one, and it just breaks down stylistically that there's not a lot of finishing power on this card. And a lot of these should see the judges' scorecards.
Are there any sides that you're considering here on the prelim card? I mean, outside of the Mickey Gall price, if it comes into the range that you're looking for, any sides in the women's fights or the other two prelim fights with the men?
Yeah, I mean, we can look at Lauren Murphy and Mara Barella. It's kind of a one that I think, you know, people should be a little bit aware of. I mean, Barella, you're looking at about minus 185 favorite, so a little bit out of that range and from a straight bet perspective, but I do want to talk about this. It's, you know, Barella extending her unbeaten streak to what, 7 upset submission over Theria in the debut. Then, you know, dropped the decision the next time out and, you know, gave Tyler Santos, who, you know, how high I am on her, her first loss in 16 fights. So Mara Barella, I think, is somebody that you can look at and say, you know, oh, she's a little bit up and down, but she, you know, she had all these streaks. She, that win against Santos, I think, is going to look better and better over time. And, you know, Barella is a girl that I think could really make some noise in this division. This one is the thing about this one. I don't know what the juice is going to be. This is going to be a slow paced battle up against the cage, striking at air. And whoever out volumes is going to win this decision. So from that perspective, I do like Barella a lot. If this line stays where it is, I think you're obviously inherently getting some value with the underdog in Murphy, just because it's going to be such low volume out there in theory. It may not take much to, you know, win a gross split decision, but definitely lean to, much towards the over in that one. And that's how that one kind of breaks down from a straight bet perspective. But when we look at the rest of this card, there's really not a lot out there from a betting opportunities. The over 2.5 would definitely be the way that I would play this. Just works out that way, that obviously when the over 2.5, you know, so many of them are likely to go to decision, that means that there's not going to be a lot of opportunities for finishes. Pass to victories are largely in judges' scorecards, and that's just not something I try to, you know, handicap over the top with.
Well, I guess we'll finish up with this point then. Next week's fight card in Uruguay, which is the first time that UFC is ever gone to Uruguay. And when you look at this fight card here, some very familiar names on the main card, not many familiar names on the prelim card. So who knows? We may not have a whole lot to talk about next week either.
Like you said, a lot of names that people will know on there. Shevchenko, obviously, on her run right now. Ozdemir, Latifi, Mike Perry, Vicente Luque. It's a pretty good main card, honestly. It's a little bit top heavy, but on down through the prelims, Santos is on there. So there'll be a little bit of stuff to talk about next week. Definitely more main card heavy. I'm sure we're going to be looking at a huge favorite in Shevchenko and stuff like that. But a little bit top heavy, a little bit opposite next week, I think.
Christian Pina of the Sports Gambling Podcast, his preview over at bangthebook.com right now for this UFC on ESPN 5 event. And you can check him out on Twitter at Christian Pina, P-I-N-A. Christian, always a pleasure, my friend. Thank you so much, man. And we'll talk to you again next week.
All right, buddy. Enjoy the fights.
There you go. There's Christian Pina again of the Sports Gambling Podcast at Christian Pina, P-I-N-A on Twitter. Coming up on Monday, new edition of the Bettors Box, my MLB betting podcast. We should have a lot of content for you next week, so make sure you keep it tuned right here to Bang the Book Radio. That'll do it for me. Thank you so much for listening, everybody, and I will talk to you again on Monday.